2. Carlotta seems to believe that we had these children in order to experience the joy of rearing children. Sargent seems to think we had the children in order to create an army of 7. I don't think the children we got are likely to bring either joy or military triumph. But their existence does allow us to study the results of the second generation after we modified Anton's key so that giantism is no longer linked to high intellect. It worked to arrest our own growth, of course. We are still a little below average for well-nourished specimens of humankind, but that's not a problem for people living aboard a ship. However, our 7 children are not undersized the way Father was, and the way we were in our childhood. It appears that removing the giantism component means that, from now on, our offspring will follow the normal human growth pattern from birth on. Sargent believes I am endangering our children's future by continuing to distribute the data on our children's growth and intellectual development to a few research institutions that at least claim to be studying Anton's key. Carlotta thinks my efforts along those lines are worthless. They may both be right. However, those research institutions have to continue receiving data and at least pretending to incorporate it into their ongoing studies because we supply their funding and have for many centuries. Our interstellar travel at near light speed has relativistic effects, so that whenever I transmit a report, it is acknowledged by someone who was not on the project the last time I transmitted. I only hope that the data I send is not immediately deleted and vaporized. I hope they are afraid enough of loss of funding to keep careful records so that the data continue to exist, even if there is no actual research going on. Meanwhile, our children bicker with siblings and cousins, with only a few alliances here and there among them. They are an unpromising bunch, like the children of royalty throughout history. If they aren't already conspiring to kill us and take control of the ship, they will begin doing so any time now. After all, we did, or at least Sargent did, and tried to bully Carlotta and me into joining him. It is disturbing how similar our children are to the way we were as children. But when I suggested to Carlotta that we jettison the whole tribe of them into the cold of space, she rolled her eyes and said, "Not yet." We may well regret the decision to conceive them in the first place, to take them with us and to let them grow up. But the urge to reproduce is strong in all animals, even Homo leguminensis. I actually sometimes like my own children to the point of feeling some slight affection toward them. I could easily dump Sargent's twins at any time, but his youngest, Thulium, shows some signs of having a tolerable personality. And the only way I could harm Carlotta's children would be to kill her first, which I will never do. Without Carlotta, we wouldn't outnumber Sargent, so my survival would be somewhere between impossible and intolerable. Like it or not, we're stuck with these young hyperhumans until we get a good idea of who they are and what they can accomplish. That's my research project for now. Collecting data on them makes me look like an attentive father and uncle. So far, so good. Andrew Delfeeke, Appendix C, Herodotus Papers.
Sprout had made decorations for his brother Blue's birthday celebration. The whole concept of keeping the old Earth calendar on a spaceship traveling at relativistic speeds seemed absurd to him, but since the computer maintained both the real-time calendar and the ship's calendar, there was no reason not to notice when birthdays rolled around. Besides, Sprout actually liked Blue. He was a kind boy, and he was happy to befriend any of the cousins. Blue and Thulium got along quite well, which was a kindness, since the twins made Thulium's life a torture of teasing and deception and disparagement. So Sprout programmed birthday displays into all the screens and monitors that were capable of graphics. He did it only in Mother's quarters, where Sprout and Blue lived with her. He knew that if he tried to put such displays up in the public areas of the ship, Uncle Sargent and Uncle Ender would make them go away, because the screens were for monitoring ship operations, not celebrating meaningless landmarks in the lives of post-human children, whose genetics were still so unknown that nobody could guess what age meant anymore. Blue came into the family's central table, saw the screens on the walls and the holo display in the center of the table, and smiled. The holo display had balloons infinitely rising at different rates of speed, new ones appearing at the bottom as the old ones disappeared at the top. The screens on the walls had other celebratory activities going on, fireworks, parades, dancing. The places and the people might have had some meaning, but to children who had memories mostly of living aboard a ship, they were all strangers, and the places carried no sentimental weight. "Are any of these places Tochoji?" asked Blue. "Sorry," said Sprout. "I think the uncles have kept the ship's computer from fulfilling any requests concerning information or images from our birth city." "I know," said Blue, "but I also know you're pretty good at cheating." "Mother would know if I did it," said Sprout. "And while she thinks, or says she thinks, trying to hide our birth world from us is pointless, she also thinks that it's a bad thing for us to plunge into the depths of the ship's computer, because what if we interfered with ship operations?" Blue laughed. "As if we would. She told me that I might damage something without realizing what I was doing." Blue laughed even louder. "Doesn't she know who you are? Doesn't she understand what we are?" Sprout smiled and shrugged. "Sometimes I don't think she knows what she is." "I hope Uncle Sergeant lets Thulium come to the party."
"He'd better," said Sprout, "because it's not much of a party with just the three of us."
"I invited Boss and Little Mum," said Blue.
"You really think Uncle Ender will let them come?"
"He's a lot nicer than Uncle Sergeant," said Blue.
"Nicer, but not more lenient. Whatever they think is right, they stick to it," said Sprout.
"I think Mother's the same way," said Blue. "She talks like she sympathizes with us, and it's the uncles who won't let us do things. But I think she secretly agrees with them, but blames it on them because she wants us to think she's kinder, or that she loves us more."
"Well, you know I agree with you about how deceptive Mother can be," said Sprout. "I just didn't realize you were already so cynical."
"I'm a leguminid," said Blue. "We don't really believe anything that anybody tells us."
Sprout pulled out a piece of paper. That instantly silenced Blue, who looked at it in awe. It had a color photograph printed out on one side of it. It had been folded twice, so it could hide inside a pocket.
"You stole paper," said Blue. "You stole printer time. That's irreplaceable."
"It's perfectly replaceable any time Mother and the uncles decide to provision our ship on a planet," said Sprout. "I wanted to give you a present."
"All these decorations," said Blue. "That was plenty. That's a lot."
Meanwhile, Sprout opened up the paper and laid it flat on the table, holding down two of the corners. Blue held down the other two and looked.
"It's Tochoji," said Sprout. "There aren't any images from Nokonoshima on the ship's computer."
"There are if you search for them with Mother's login."
"Then it's easy," said Sprout. "Where did we live?" asked Blue.
"I don't know. It's just an aerial photo of the mouth of the river and the city built on high ground over here, so that when the spring rains cause the river to flood, it doesn't drown the town."
"It's not a very big place," said Blue.
"It's bigger than the population of this ship," said Sprout. "And our father Yuto still lives there."
"Do you know that? We've been flying for years since we left, and with relativistic time, he might be..."
"If he was younger than 30 when you were born, Blue," said Sprout, "then he's way older now."
"Our ship is 3,000 years old," said Blue. "Our relativistic difference is not as great as with really modern starships that come closer to light speed. Also, we haven't been pushing our ship to maximum speed in our lifetime."
Sprout shook his head. "All right, maybe he's still alive and misses you every day." Immediately, he regretted saying that, because tears instantly came to Blue's eyes though he blinked them away. I wonder if he ever does think about me, said Blue.
I bet he does. I bet he thinks about me and Mother, too. Even if he married somebody else after we left, even if he has other children, I think he secretly loves us first, said Sprout.
Do you really think so? Asked Blue.
No, said Sprout. He's a human, and Uncle Sergeant tells us all the time what perfidious, hypocritical monsters humans are.
The door had opened silently enough that Sprout had not heard it, but there was Mother, walking into the room.
Speak of Uncle Cincinnatus with respect, please, Brussels Delphiki. You know he hates that name even worse than... Why do we have stupid city names? Asked Blue.
Since you never use them, said Mother, what does it matter what your real names are?
At least we're not named for rare earth elements like Sergeant's kids, said Sprout.
They don't use those names either, said Mother. And Uncle Ender's children both are named for real people. Your grandmother Petra Arcanian and a great military commander, Mazer Rackham, who taught Ender Wigan and the Giant as well. But nobody uses those very honorable names either. I'm disgusted with the whole business of naming.
You gave us names as if you called up a map of the Benelux countries, closed your eyes, and touched the screen with your finger, said Blue.
That's exactly what I did, said Mother. Because the giant, my father, was born in a city in the Low Countries. I didn't think Rotterdam would be a good name because you or your cousins would have made too much of the syllable dam and the word rotter. So I named you for different cities.
So why am I called Blue? Asked Blue.
I've told you that story before.
I forget, said Blue. You don't forget anything, said Sprout. None of us do.
I forget whenever I want Mother to tell me again, said Blue. Delft is a city that became famous for making a certain kind of ceramic dishware, which was called China because that kind of ceramic first came from the country of China. So for a while, your nickname was China. And then, because Delft China is always painted with blue designs, we started calling you Blue.
And I was nicknamed Sprout, said Sprout, because when I was born, my father Udo thought I was so small that I looked like a sprouting plant, and
there was a common miniature variant of the cabbage plant, said Mother, that was called Brussels Sprouts. Your name being Brussels, your uncles started calling you Sprout.
My father Udo called me that first, said Sprout, because the uncles had never seen or eaten an actual Brussels sprout, but Father Udo had.
Mother said nothing. She knew that there was no point in arguing with Sprout when he made a statement like that, because he would never believe any refutation. She explained that to him once when he said, "If it isn't true, then why did you stop arguing?" Her explanation was, "I have only so much breath in my life, Brussels Delphiki, and I'm not going to waste any more of it arguing with someone who doesn't listen." Unlike Thulium, who constantly challenged her father and Uncle Ender and Mother about how they should have stayed on Nokonoshima, Sprout never openly challenged his mother about such things, never in front of the uncles or the cousins. But here, with just the three of them in their own quarters, he felt more free to make it clear that he believed that he and Blue had been cheated when Mother and the uncles stole them away into space.
We're celebrating Blue's birthday now, said Mother.
Not till Thulium comes, said Blue.
What if she doesn't come? Asked Mother.
We told her 1800 hours, said Sprout, and she still has 15 minutes.
I don't think Sergeant's going to allow her, Mother began. The door slid open.
Thulium came trotting in. Happy as a lark.
Too happy, Sprout decided. She didn't have permission. She had snuck away.
Let's get this party started, said Sprout.
Who knew how quickly Uncle Sergeant would appear to take her home?
They had all read about birthday parties in various places, they knew that in some places people ate cake and others pie and sugar candies and other treats elsewhere. On the Herodotus, there was only one treat that the ship's kitchen knew how to make, ice cream. And that was good enough. It's not as if they had parties every day, though Uncle Ender always remarked about how with seven children practically swamping the boat, they seemed to have a birthday every week of the year. Mother served it out in little bowls. "It's actually the French recipe for a dessert called glace," she explained. "Which is identical to Italian gelato," said Sprout. "We can read, too."
"But it's the French recipe programmed into the kitchen," said Mother. "And I can't help but wish we could have some made with real sugar."
"We have sugar," said Blue. "It's sweet."
"It's very slightly sweet," said Mother. "I've had the real thing. You have no idea."
"We would have an idea," said Sprout, "if we still lived on Nokonoshima."
"What makes you think they have ice cream there?" asked Mother.
"Because it's the only place you ever lived where you could have tasted anything real from Earth."
"I was born on Earth," said Mother.
"And the giant took you and the uncles with him when you were so young you were still stupid as a human."
"Yes," said Mother. "I tasted ice cream many times in Tochoji."
"With our father Yuto," said Blue.
"He was a kind and generous man," said Mother. "Which is part of why you are the two kindest, most generous children among the cousins on the Herodotus. No one knows why you are so kind, Thulium."
"Now you're just lying to make us feel better about not having our father," said Sprout.
"Eat your ice cream," said Mother.
The door had not opened since Thulium came in,
but now there was a man standing just inside. Neither Sprout nor Blue had noticed him before, if he had been standing there a while. They looked at him, dumbstruck. Mother saw the direction of their gaze and turned.
"Who are you?" she asked. "And how did you get on this ship?"
"I'm an image, not a person," said the man. "My data were transferred here over the past several days, so now I dwell inside your ship's computer. Though I'm only a copy of the image and personality and program set inside my ship's computer."
"A light-speed transfer?" asked Mother. Sprout knew that this would mean that the stranger's ship was very, very close.
"An Ansible transfer," said the man, "as you well know."
"Nobody knows our Ansible address," said Mother.
"Many people know it, including all the research foundations you keep funding to pretend to research Anton's key," said the man.
"Are you from one of those foundations?" asked Mother.
"I control all their computers and all their Ansible communications," said the man. "I have received every report and request that you have sent them and they have sent you over the years. I have always known where you were and what you were doing."
"So you're a spy," said Mother.
"If I were a spy, I'd hardly tell you so openly," said the man. "I gave Julian Delphiki this ship, not because he bought it, but because he needed it, and I had ships to give out in those days. I authorized his voyage of research and discovery. He could not have undertaken it if I had not wanted it to happen. And I was there when Petra Arcani and Delphiki said goodbye to the three children that her husband Julian took with him. I knew you in the cradle, Carlotta. I knew the woman that you were named after. I knew the boy that Andrew was named for while he was still alive."
"Andrew Wiggin is dead?" asked Mother.
"Almost everyone is dead," said the man. "Except you."
"And you? How did you stay alive? Relativistic travel?"
"I sometimes did that," said the man, "until it became too boring. Then the brain state recording equipment became sophisticated enough
that I had myself recorded a few dozen times using a few dozen different methodologies. Now all those recordings talk to each other and decide what to make me say or do. Right now, only one of them has been copied into the computer aboard Herodotus, but that one is able to make me speak for all.
I know who you are, said Mother. She turned to Sprout. Do you know who he is?
He's Hiram Graff, said Sprout, the minister of colonization who ended up controlling all space travel for a while, the founder of Battle School, and the teacher of the original Andrew Wigan and of the giant.
I knew him first as Bean, said Hiram Graff. I'm flattered that you have been taught anything about me.
Mother loves to teach us extremely obscure facts, said Sprout.
I'm sure you know many of them, said Graff. I believe they call you Sprout.
You have been spying, said Sprout.
That name isn't in any records that
your mother writes about her children in her notes, and your Uncle Andrew writes about all the children in his notes.
And those notes, said Mother, are transmitted to the foundations we work with, where no one ever reads them.
I read them, said Graff. Everything you transmit, you are sending to me.
Why are you here? Asked Mother. After millennia of keeping your vigil a secret, why are you coming here more or less in person?
I have been slowing down your ship to non-relativistic speed. I have a job I need you to do in real time.
What job? Asked Sprout.
Saving the human race.
Mother shook her head and laughed. That was your job back when the Formics still existed, and it was your job to save the human species. Now humanity is spread among the 100 worlds and beyond, preserving thousands of unique cultures and languages, with trade constantly flowing among them. There are no hive queens, and there is no other possible threat that can put human survival at risk.
Graff gave a wan little smile.
The threat is not coming in spaceships that can be shot out of the sky, or in colonies it can be detected and obliterated, said Graff. It comes in the form of a virus called Descolada, which can insinuate itself into every form of life, comprehend and parse its genetic code, and then reconstruct it so that it must faithfully reproduce the Descolada virus or die.
So I've heard, said Mother. I believe a fleet was sent to destroy the planet where it resides.
The virus is, in some incomprehensible way, intelligent enough to adapt to every attempt to destroy it. Before he died, Andrew Wigan led a scientific project to create an antivirus that replaces the Descolada with a workalike that preserves the lives of the infected, but no longer has the power to infect new victims.
Did he succeed? Asked Mother.
He did, said Graff, by methods that cannot yet be duplicated. But that solved only that one world's problem. We can only assume that this virus has been broadly dispersed in order to infect every world that has genetically coded life. Eventually, it may find and infect all the human colonies.
Distribute the cure, said Mother. Save the human race.
If every world has the cure, said Graff, the Descolada will find a way around it. It may be trying to do so on the world that it already controls.
Lusitania, said Sprout.
Graff looked at him with surprise. A very good simulation, thought Sprout, to imitate the facial expressions of the man who provided the model for this hologram.
Descolada means unsticker or unglued in Portuguese or Spanish. Only in the tiny Brazilian colony world of Lusitania could such a thing be kept under control.
Why do you need us? Asked Blue. It's my birthday party.
Sorry to spoil it, said Graff.
I just wondered if you wanted some ice cream,
said Blue.
He's a hologram, said Sprout. We can give him a hologram of ice cream, said Blue, as if it were the most obvious thing.
Graf smiled.
Yes, that would be nice. It would be nice to be included in the party.
Sprout could imagine Uncle Sargent saying something about fraternizing with the enemy, and Uncle Ender speaking of meaningless gestures and fake hospitality.
You don't know where the Descolada originates, said Mother.
We've found a candidate, but we haven't figured out how to know if that planet was the origin or an earlier victim, said Graf.
You no longer control all the ships in the Hundred Worlds, said Mother. But what do you imagine we can accomplish with one ship?
My original may be dead, said Graf, though I don't know that for sure. He may just be retired. But I still have some control over all the shipping between worlds, and all Ansible communications are handled by a brilliant program that shares information extensively with me. So don't imagine that I'm powerless. The only place, in fact, where I am powerless is aboard this ship.
Not powerless if you can appear inside my home during a private family party, said Mother.
Not your nuclear family, said Graf. Since young Thulium is here, soaking up everything that we're saying.
Thulium stood up.
Nobody will hear about any of this from me, she said.
She's telling the truth, said Blue. Thulium never tells secrets.
What I say to one, I'd happily say to all. I merely assumed that I would be listened to better by the people in this room than by any other group of people on the Herodotus.
Sprout had to agree with him.
What do you want us to do? Asked Sprout.
Graf raised an eyebrow and looked at him.
Are you now negotiating on behalf of the Leguminids on this ship?
Asking an obvious question isn't negotiating, said Sprout. You came here to get us to do something. Test your possible Descolada planet? We're ill-equipped to do that, as Mother said.
All the exploratory teams, all the computer analyses, all of the everything that we've applied to the problem have come up empty. So we need somebody smarter to figure out what we should be searching for and what the markers of its role as the Descolada's origin might be. So we'll know if this is it.
To Sprout's pleasure, Graf directed all these words to him, as if he was an actual person instead of a little child.
Then it dawned on him that maybe this was how he always spoke to bright little children, how he spoke to the giant and Ender Wiggin when they were small, and Graf was the commander of battle school.
Here in this room, said Graf, is a team of four, Carlotta, Brussels, Blue, and Thulium, who might be the best combination to think of what the parameters of our quest should be.
Are you trying to divide the Leguminids into rival camps, Hiram Graf? Asked Mother.
I'm trying to evade the skepticism and resentment of the uncles and their children, said Graf.
And when they discover what you've been doing, won't their skepticism and resentment be many times greater because of this concealment?
Yes, it will. If you're afraid of them.
Taunting us won't earn our trust or our cooperation, said Mother. Of course we're afraid of them. We have no other friends or allies in the universe, and if they turn against us...
You have me, said Graf.
A shadow of a human being who once lived.
A shadow with enormous influence in the Hundred Worlds, said Graf.
Says you, said Thulium.
You'll see, said Graf. But not just me. There are the very bright humans from Lusitania, and a few from other worlds as well. They might not have Anton's key within their genome, but they're among the best that the human race has to offer at present. Their help and cooperation will not be useless to you.
I'm sure you intend us to meet them all, said Mother.
I don't care if you ever meet, said Graf. What would that matter? What I care about is sharing information, sharing ideas, trying experiments under each other's direction or suggestions, working together in real time, an alliance.
So we're to trust beings of another species, said Mother, but not my own brothers and their children?
Thulium spoke up again.
Come on, Aunt Carlotta. You know we all lie to Father so he doesn't go on a rampage. And nothing touches Uncle Ender's heart, period. He'd analyze everything Hiram Graf has told us out of existence.
Mother looked at Thulium.
I believe I haven't paid enough attention to you, Mother said to her. I will not make that mistake again.
Thulium rolled her eyes.
I didn't say anything that the rest of you didn't already know, she said. Mr. Graf was right to come to this room at this time. In fact, he was waiting for me to arrive, wasn't he?
She turned to look at the hologram.
I believe so, said Graf, though that plan might not have been a conscious one. The part of my character that is intertwined with your ship's computer might carry plans and decisions that I am not consciously aware of making.
He means no, he wasn't waiting for you, said Blue. He means that he didn't know he was waiting for you, said Mother. He means, said Sprout, that he was absolutely waiting for you, but he doesn't want you or the rest of us to know just how important he thinks you are.
Thulium cocked her head and looked at Sprout.
I didn't think you liked me, she said.
Blue is your best friend, said Sprout. Why would I interfere with that by befriending you myself?
You're all so ridiculously nice, said Mother. Sprout, get the kitchen to whip up some virtual ice cream and convey it into the hands of this simulacrum.
Have you sung Happy Birthday yet?
Asked Graf.
Is that a song?
Asked Mother.
Every school child knew it in America, said Graf, which is where I grew up.
My mother was Armenian, said Mother, and my father grew up in Holland. And the giant wasn't much for birthdays, and he also sang with little sense of tune or tone.
The words are easy, said Graf. I'll teach you.
Is that why you came to our ship tonight? Asked Mother. To teach us a song?
Yes, said Graf, to try to get us all singing the same tune together.
That's a metaphor, said Blue to Thulium. But it's also literally true, said Thulium, and Graf launched into the simple tune and the simple words. The only dispute was over whether to sing Happy Birthday, Dear Blue, or Dear China, or Dear Delft. They settled on Blue, of course, as they all must have known they were going to. And then Sprout couldn't get the stupid melody and the stupid words out of his head for the rest of the night, long after Graf popped back out of visible existence and Mother ushered Thulium out into the corridor, and then tried to get the brothers calmed down enough to sleep. The last thing Sprout said to Mother that night was, "You're going to tell the uncles about this, aren't you?"
"Don't you think I should?" asked Mother.
I think you absolutely should not, said Sprout. But I also think you absolutely must. Tonight. If you wait till tomorrow, Uncle Sergeant will accuse you of delaying because you intended not to tell.
My reasoning exactly. Secrets can't exist in a tribe this small. It would tear us apart. So even though Graf's plan would work much more smoothly, the cost of discovery would be too high. And it happens that all the other leguminids are very, very clever and creative. Maybe we'll do better together than apart.
Please don't ever sing that horrible song again, Mother, said Sprout. Especially not on my birthday.
Can't get it out of your mind? Asked Mother.
I want to jab forks in my ears to make it stop, said Sprout.
Fortunately, said Mother, you can't get a fork into your ear.